And I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Good morning, Houston. Welcome to Amplified Houston on 90.1 FM KPFT Pacifica Radio in Houston, Texas, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville, and streaming online at kpft.org. Amplified Houston is a collaboration of five nonprofit organizations: Baker Ripley, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Houston, Children at Risk, the Women's Home, the Houston Food Bank, and Houston's community radio station, KPFT Pacifica Radio. Listeners, all the programs you hear on KPFT are listener-supported. Become a sustaining member today by calling 713-526-5738 and pressing option 1. I am your host, Anna Coffey. It is my pride and privilege to serve as the CEO of the Women's Home, and this is Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, where we talk to women doing hard things. In today's show, we'll speak with none other than Donna Cole, President and CEO and founder at Cole Chemical and Distributing, Inc. But first, I want to let you know that Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home. Proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/cottage shop. And we may or may not be having a big sale on Wednesday, so check us out. Donna, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Oh, good morning. I'm looking forward to this conversation with you, Anna.
Oh, me too. Because, you know, Donna, you are truly, you know, you hear self-made woman thrown around a lot. And some people, you know, they maybe had a lot of help along the way. But you truly are a self-made woman in a field that is still to this day dominated by men. So I'm super excited to hear about your journey. Let's start by sharing a little with our audience about your role as founder of Cole Chemicals.
Yeah, so today we've been in business for 45 years, which is hard to believe.
That is really amazing.
In January of 22, I actually sold 40% of the company to help with the growth of the company strategically, and also to do more PR marketing for myself, get out of the weeds of running the organization, you know, and working on the organizations.
But sure.
We sell industrial and process chemicals to many industries, in particular automotive, the chemical industry, refineries, utilities, and the energy area. And we used to sell a lot to a lot of different areas, like personal care and things like that. But I think over the years, you have to change. You have to know when it's time to pivot.
When it's time to adapt, when you have to keep up with the times. Absolutely. And, you know, the fact that you've been around 45 years means that you have definitely mastered that. So, all right. So let's get into it. You know, Donna, this show is inspired by the women who come to the Women's Home and do hard things every day. You've been associated with the Women's Home for many, many years. So I don't have to tell you how hard our women work to reclaim their lives. And watching them grow and change and thrive every day is such a gift that I'm so lucky I get to watch. But I started the show because there are women all over the place who do that hard work. And a lot of times it's invisible. So I want to shine a light on women like you and all the other women we've interviewed to really tell that story. So let's talk about you as a woman in a male-dominated industry. You're an entrepreneur. You are an American of Japanese descent. You've done a lot of hard things over your lifetime. Let's go back to your childhood. You grew up in South Texas, right?
I did. We lived in Mission and McAllen. And in elementary school, you know, the population is half Caucasian and half Hispanic. And with this face, people bullied me. And when I was very young, first grade, and I used to hide underneath the teacher's desk when it was recess, right? So I wouldn't be bullied. And then I would bring my dad's 442 book to school to show that he was in the army and he was a US citizen, and so was I.
So can just a quick explainer, what is a 442 book?
So that's his army album. So there is a group of Japanese Americans who were segregated battalions during World War II. So it was the 100, the 442, and the MIS. And so he was in that military group, the 442.
So he
So
fought
it,
for the country.
yeah, he fought for the US, and it gave me great pride to say that I was an American citizen. And then, who knew later, as I grew up, that I would actually be able to help them get their Congressional Gold Medal.
Oh, wonderful.
An
Wow.
adult show and tell.
That's amazing. That is really amazing. So Donna, let's talk about that bullying that you experienced, because I think we focus on the racism that happens with people of African descent. And we forget that people of Asian descent also have experienced incredible racism and stigma, and especially back during World War II, where we were actually interning many Japanese Americans because Japan was on the other side of the war. So, you faced a lot of that bullying, as you said, as a child, and you hid under your teacher's desk. What do you think the impact was of that bullying? Like, how did you respond to it, and what do you think the long-term impact was?
Thanks, Anna, for asking. I think, there's many ways you could respond to it. You could be mean, you could be revengeful, and you could try to get even. And I think for me, I felt so bad that I wanted people to like me. I wanted to do well, but I wanted to get to know people, right? Because once you get to know people and you ask questions about them, people start to melt and they know that you're genuine and you really want to know about them. And that's how I started connecting people to do great things, right? Who knew as an adult it would come in handy, but I also was ADHD organization. So I was in the Latin club, I was in the twirler, I was in the art club, I was in hospital auxiliary, just to get to know people and to, be a part of the community.
Yeah, I think that's such, I think that is a theme that comes up again and again and again, is, getting through hard things by being part of a community. But I want to just double click on something you said just now that I thought was so powerful. Instead of responding with anger or retaliation, you responded in a kind way, and you actually tried to get to know them as people, and that melted, you said, I think the word you used was melted, melted them. And I think, I have a friend who whose mantra is, it's hard to hate up close. And which I love that saying, because it's true. There's so much anti-immigrant sentiment in our world right now. But if you know families who are immigrants, I mean, it's really hard to just, I mean, the families I know, are hardworking, contributing members of society. All they want is a better life for their kids. And I think if we had more of that human connection, we wouldn't be so splintered, right?
Right. I think, there's empathy and there's compassion, and everybody has a story. And so it's up to us to be curious and ask questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So even as a young person, you were made of something different. You chose a different way to respond. I was bullied as a child, and it just made me kind of crawl into myself and suffer from a lot of self worth issues. And it didn't I didn't respond the same way you did. I wish I had, but what do you think it was that made you different? What do you think it was that made you respond in a more mature way than your age?
I think it was my parents' influence. They were givers, and we always helped other people, canned good drives, et cetera. When people were sick, they were always there going to visit them, taking them food. And now after you grow up, right, you look back and you think, oh my goodness, we were poor. I went to a clinic. I didn't go to a real doctor, right? And so, so those things come back to you, and unfortunately, my folks are gone, so I can't ask them a lot of questions. And my two brothers are gone, so I'm an orphan now. So you can adopt me
Oh,
anytime, Anna.
I
But I really think it was the way that they treated people and the way that I wanted to be treated, and to make sure that I treated people the way that they wanted to be treated.
Wow, and that is the golden rule, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I
The
think there's a
platinum rule,
golden rule
usually.
and a platinum rule, right? So
Yeah, the
you have to do
platinum rule.
both.
That's right. That's right. Treat people how they want to be treated is so profound. So Donna, let's talk about that. So you developed that kind of grace and presence and mature attitude towards this and as a child. And then as you progress through your life and your career, you hit some other roadblocks and things that came up. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the things that happened to you on your way to founding the chemical company?
Yeah, sure. And let me tell you, the other foundation my parents gave me was Girl Scouts, right?
Oh, love it.
So that was a good basis for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the chemical industry back in 1980, I look back now and I guess I realize I really was a pioneer because people tell me that. But there weren't a lot of women, you're right, in the industry at that time. And when I started Cobalt Chemical, it was because my customers asked me to start my own company, because they liked the way I was responsive or meeting their quality requirements. And then what happened is I started a company. I didn't want to call it Fujimoto Chemical at the time, because that was my maiden name, because I had Tammy, who was 4 years old, and I didn't want to change my name because of that. But also, there was Japan bashing. So, in order to have some vision and to know what's trending and going on, you really do have to come into it with eyes wide open, right? And so, I started the company as Cold Chemical and Distributing. And I had this guy came up to me and was poking me in the chest, right? And saying, "You are not going to make it." He said, "Because you don't know the presidents and the vice presidents of all these chemical companies and refineries." And I looked at him. And I was kind of in shock. And I said, "Well, you're probably 40 some odd. You probably have another 10 years. I'm 27 and I have another 40 years. So in that time, I'll get to know all the presidents and the vice presidents." So, yeah. And then I had a situation when you talk about what were some other challenges was that getting credit, right? I had some companies like Shell and DuPont, who gave me credit because I had already been in the industry for 5 years with another company.
Financial, I just want to make clear, like financial credit is what you're talking about.
Right, for
Because
companies to buy products.
in 1980, women were had only had the right to have a credit card in their own name for 5 or 6 years at that point, right? So I want to kind of frame this from like, yeah, 1980. I mean, I remember 1980, but what people forget, and I think young people need to hear, is that women didn't have the right to have a credit card until the mid
Exactly.
70s.
Exactly.
So the
Even though I
fact
paid
that,
the bills, right?
even though you paid the bills, right? So the fact that you started your own company in 1980, when it wasn't even that common for at that point for women to have their own credit, or and then the fact that then you got credit facilities from some of the large corporations, that was really exceptional at the time.
It was. And then, some companies wouldn't sell to me. So I had to get my mentor to buy the product and sell to me, and to be able to grow the business, right? And have new products for other customers. But also, I realized too that they asked me when I started my business to have a commitment to grow, hire minorities and women, get back to community, and put iron in the ground. So those are the things I think if somebody can tell you what you needed to do for them to continue to do business with you, it just makes all the difference in the world. And
What a gift that was too. Yeah, that they told you exactly what they wanted you to do.
right. And so we continued to do that. And I even had a situation before I started Cold Chemical where my boss had asked me to sell product that was off spec. You asked me earlier about moral courage. And it's okay to have moral courage for myself if I'm going to be the one who's going to lose my job. But it's another thing to have moral courage where other people are going to be negatively impacted, and that unintentional consequences that may happen, right?
Well, this area is so rich, and we're going to come right back to it after the break. But first, let's take a few seconds to talk about how this radio show is coming to you. KPFT takes no advertising dollars at all, and almost every one of the people who work to bring you the show are volunteers. So please call 713-526-5738 and press option one to become a sustaining member today. We are back with Donna Cole, founder and CEO of Cole Chemicals, listening to her amazing journey. And Donna, just before the break, you started talking about moral courage, which is such an important topic, especially in our world today. And I think what you were like, you were talking about having moral courage when it comes to yourself, and that is easy and, viable for you to access, right? But talk to us about this concept of moral courage when others, it might put others in jeopardy.
Yeah, I think we have to be thoughtful in our skills with critical thinking and problem solving to look beyond what is this, what is happening, and what can you do to take action? And what action can you take, but is that something that's going to be amplified in your own, on your own self? Are you going to be damaged? And for me, that's okay, right? I'll survive. But am I going to do something for other people or to other people that would be hurtful? So, we have this thing about working together for the greater good. And I believe that's what you and your collaboration do, right? Every day. So we just always have to be mindful of that. And there will be some people who are out there. I'll give you, for instance, Governor Carr of Colorado during the after Pearl Harbor and the start of the US getting into the war with Japan and the Japanese being moved off the West Coast to internment camps. He said, come, Japanese Americans, come to Colorado, come farm, come live, come help our economy. And do you know he was never reelected? So that ended his career. And we had another situation in Beaumont where a commissioner said, no, we cannot have Jap Road. It's derogatory. And the Japanese community, said, thank you. We support you and you support us. He was never reelected, right? But even for Governor Carr, there is now a road named after him.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So, yeah, moral courage. I mean, those two leaders that you talk about definitely had the moral courage to do the right thing in the moment. But they also paid the price, right?
They did. Same thing with Sugihara. He was a diplomat in Lithuania, and he gave over 1,000 Jews passage to leave Lithuania to go to other countries. Japan didn't want him to do that. And he was demoted afterwards. But today, there's over 250,000 people because of him, because of those over 1,000 people, right?
Yeah, so I think moral courage, I think you're right. Like moral courage, if it's something that you will pay the price for, but it's going to benefit many, many other people, then it's definitely feels like the right thing. And we they're heroes really to practice that moral courage, even at their own expense. But there's also these situations where it's not always so black and white, right? And you may want to take a stand on something, and I definitely suffer from this. You may want to take a stand on something that's really important and you feel like it's important to the people you serve, but it could actually then also have a negative impact in some other way, an unintended consequence or something like that. So how do you discern and what do you do in those situations?
Oh, it's really hard. And I think you really have to sit down and say, how big is my ego? Can I hide my ego? And do I really want to do this? Because, for me, it's hard for me to hurt people. right?
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't feel right. We have a situation where if we speak out now, we could lose funding, or we can lose an opportunity for the future. And so you do have to think about other people. And I hope everyone can do that, right?
Yeah.
Is stop and think.
I will say, that is really prescient in our world today, because there's a lot of things, a lot of changes that have happened because of our current administration. And there's many of us in the nonprofit industry who have very strong feelings about some of those things, whether they're positive or negative. And it can be really hard to discern, like, where is it appropriate for me to stake my claim? Is this the right hill for me to die on? And what is going to be like the lasting impact for the people that I am here to serve?
Yes.
Right. So it does become a bit of a quandary, a bit of a difficult thing to work through. So you talked a lot earlier about community and the importance of community. How much did community play a role in your ability to have the life that you aspire to?
Well, I think, when my customer says you need to give back, that was like, yes, it's a blessing. And I've been doing it. So this was not difficult for me, right? At all. Actually, my difficulty is learning how to say no, as you know. I have so many areas that I'm passionate about: education, healthcare, business, the economy, the workforce. Can I handle all of that? And my significant other says, no, you can't. But people say, well, how do you do it? And I don't get a lot of sleep. But it fuels me. It's my passion.
Well, and you are very engaged in the community. I know you serve on several boards. I know you serve on a foundation board. And I know that you're an incredibly generous person. So, I think that is what community means to many of us, that I think, you talked earlier about how people gave you a hand up
Yes.
when you needed it. And now I see you repaying that in the form of all of your community engagement, which is a really commendable and frankly quite beautiful aspect to your life. So if there is a woman sitting out there right now listening to this show who's trying to gather the courage to start her own business or forge an unknown path, speak directly to her. What do you want her to hear and know?
I want her to know that she needs to know who she is first. Strength. You can go online to Strength Finder and take a little survey, and it'll feed you back your top five strengths. Use those to look at your life in little segments as elementary, middle school, high school, college, career. And whatever you achieved and you were rewarded for, look at those strengths and see how did you use them, because that will help you develop who you are innately, right? And then you can use those in your business, because those are the strengths that will propel you. And then those areas that you don't have, you go find somebody who will work for you to fill those spaces, right? And just do it. You can have two jobs, but at some point you're going to have to make a decision and prioritize. Do you want to be safe and keep your job, or do you want to take a chance? Do you want to go out there and, do something that somebody else isn't doing, maybe, or do it better and be successful? I think, people look at failure as an issue with starting your own business, and it takes a while. But failure is great. It's an opportunity to learn and to grow.
Oh, yeah.
And I've done that so many times, and also looking around, knowing what the trends are, making sure that you're ahead of things, so that when those trends, the effects happen, you're in the right place at the right time. So I just say, go and do it. Start your
Go
own
and do it.
business. And this is a great time, right? With technology, oh my gosh, it's so much easier than when it was when I was coming through the rain.
That's for sure. Our world has changed so much. So, Donna, what I like to ask most of my guests as just a closing statement is, could you share with us what's bringing you joy in your life right now?
Wow. Bringing me joy right now is building a multi-billion dollar film industry in Houston. In
Oh my
Texas.
goodness, we didn't even touch on that.
Well, you
Tell
didn't
me
ask me that
more.
question earlier. No, actually, the state of Texas is giving $300 million every other year for 10 years. The city of Houston is giving $100,000 incentives, and we need to build this new industry in Houston, in Texas, to build the workforce, and we can do it. We have great stories to tell.
We do. Oh, we do. Oh, my goodness. Donna, we are at the end of our time today, but I can see that I need to have you back for some more conversation. This has just been wonderful. So I'm so excited about what's bringing you joy right now, and that just opens up a whole other world. So thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show, for sharing your wisdom, for sharing your story. You are pretty much the epitome of a woman doing hard things over and over and over again. So I have no doubt that we are going to see that multi-billion dollar film business here
We
in
will.
Houston.
Thanks, Anna. I really
Thank
appreciate you.
you. I really appreciate you too. And we'll be having you back. I want to remind our guests that Amplified Houston is supported in part by the Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer in Houston, owned and operated by the Women's Home. Proceeds from the Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/cottageshop. Please be sure to stay tuned for Gulf Streams with Weston Twardowski for the latest environmental and climate news in the Gulf Coast region and beyond. This is Anna Coffey from Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, over and out.
It's time now for your good news for a good planet. The Alternative Limb Project. An amputee is often defined by what's missing, but prosthetic limb maker Sophia Di Oliveira Barata sees things differently. Known for being a master maker of realistic body parts, legs, arms, feet, hands, fingers, and toes, Sophie's artistic side drove her to explore an abstract and surreal version of her profession. Her company, The Alternative Limb Project, offers amputees an opportunity to express themselves with sculptural limbs that are as unique as they are. Working closely with her clients, she has designed prosthetic limbs that are true works of art, as well as functioning body parts. Each piece, like art, is also titled, such as Synchronized, an arm designed as a piece of jewelry whose internal electronics read the wearer's pulse and through the wrist ticks in time to her heartbeat. Phantom Limb is a bionic arm complete with a USB port, a small drone, FPV goggles, LED